Hey everybody, what's going on? Happy Thursday night to you and yours. We are here with my guest tonight, the one and only Mr. Andre Como from MTV's Real World. I can't wait to talk to him. But before I tell everybody about Andre's experiences back in the day and today, I got to tell you about Bombers and Sleeves. They are our official sponsor, and they are the lifestyle apparel brand, and they're dedicated to bringing you the war on self-doubt. This is for the bold, the fearless, and the authentic souls who never back down, and they wear it all on their sleeves. Bomb your boundaries and shop Bombers and Sleeves today at bombersandsleeves.com. So, without further ado, the man who was on everybody's TV screen 29 years ago, and guess what? He's back, and I want to know if he's more surprised than we are that he's back.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, I wasn't too, it's weird. I had a weird impression of the show for many years. Something, you know, the subsequent seasons of Real World and what reality TV became and ultimately turned into had very much colored my perception of the show that I was even on. And it wasn't until recently that when we were in negotiations to be in a part of this reunion, that I actually dug out the copies of the original series that I had not watched since its original airing in 1992. And I watched it from beginning to end, and I was so pleasantly surprised by the quality of the show, the quality of the sort of conversations that we were having, and how substantive everything was, rather than just kind of fluff and not that I really thought that's what we did, but memory had a way of sort of tainting the actual memory of it a little bit. And so I was really pleasantly surprised when I watched it and realized, you know, this is actually pretty good.
You know, that's the funny thing. Like, so if people don't know, right now, the original cast of MTV's Real World is back. The seven of them. We'll say seven. I'm not going to go into that. I don't want to expose stuff. But the seven of them are back. And they intertwine the old clips with new clips. And it really, like, I got to say this. Like, you know, watching that first episode and seeing those old clips, you know, 30 years later, I said to myself, wow, like, it's a lot different now being that 21-year-old kid watching it on my sister's couch, now being a 50-year-old person and looking at it and saying how relevant it was then and relevant it is still now 30 years later, but yet still very – and this is – you know, the funny thing was literally 3 o'clock this morning, me and my fiance are in bed, and we were like, oh, my God, the new episode's out. So we had to watch it.
So you watched the newest one?
Yes.
Okay.
And the thing,
you're up to date.
I'm up to date. And the thing I said after watching that is, you can truly see, and you didn't realize it as we were kids watching, fellow kids, but you guys were truly educated. And you know, when we're all kids, it doesn't come on off that way, but you can see the true education of all of you in a different way.
Mm. Well, we were very experienced. There's no doubt about it. We were not even the youngest of us was really sharp. Julie, mm-hmm. You know, Julie was sharp as a tack at 19, and I think that we all had our life. We all had, you know, vast life experience that we brought to the table. Just moving into the loft. And I think that we brought unique perspectives, each of us having that life experience and our own perspective. I would say that, you know, certainly It's funny how time changes some things and some things not so much, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah, you'll see when you watch this season anyways.
Now, all right, let's rewind. Let's go back. I want to know like some origins, like the whole thing. Like when you originally found out about this and auditioned for the whole process, what were you under the assumption of that you were trying out for?
Well, so I received a phone call. How it all played out was MTV, the casting directors at Buna Murray were going around to where young people worked and congregated at sort of cool, you know, I guess now it would have been tech companies. But back then it was record companies and radio stations and places like that. And that's where they were going to meet possible candidates for the show. And my older sister worked for EMI Records.
Okay.
In the promotions department. And one of her friends literally just sort of recommended me to the casting director, who then spoke to my sister. And Colette is her name. She said, yeah, I'm sure Andre'd be interested. Give him a call. And gave the casting director my number. I received the phone call. And the pitch was, would you be interested in a documentary-style experimental television show that featured your lives and you know, your band? And of course, you know, yeah. Of course I'll do that. It's, on the network that speaks directly to our generation, mm-hmm. As nothing else did at the time. And still kind of, you know, nothing. It's so strange how powerful MTV was, and still is, but, nothing spoke to Gen X the way that MTV did. Nothing. And sure. when something tried to speak to Gen X, it fell flat. Mm-hmm. You know, they really had Gen X. They had the ear of Gen X. And so it's interesting when they, you know, when they reached out to me, I was thrilled. A documentary style TV show that featured me and my band on the only music network that speaks to my generation. Sure.
Sold.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was already living in New York. Yeah. I was, or New Jersey. I was, you know, my band had a house in, in New Brunswick, which is about 40 minutes outside the city. And we would, you know, we were playing the New York metro area for a whole year beforehand. We had actually moved out a year to the day that I moved into the loft. We moved to the New York area from Detroit, where we're all right. originally from.
Now, do you think that was like the major selling point was to put your band over
for
at the
me,
time?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, that's, I mean, that yeah. was really, that was everything to me at the sure. time. I mean, my life really revolved around my band at that time.
Now, I want to put this out there too. Like, it's funny, like when I was watching the first few episodes and seeing the old clips of you, I instantly thought to myself, and I don't know if you're familiar with this band or not, but I was like, wow, like Andre, now looking at Andre, reminds me of Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they were great. They were great. Very, you know, it's funny how Seattle's music scene was really taking hold and really was the most powerful movement in music at that time. And our look at the time, really, we got associated with that sure. movement, but really our sound was much more Midwestern. We had much more in common with bands like The Replacements and Soul Asylum than we did with Soundgarden and Nirvana. Although we were, you know, we had our heavy music, it definitely was rooted in a more Midwestern Americana style that became more prevalent as our albums went on. We made three records and right. and each one got more rootsy and less heavy. And as funny as that is, now I make the heaviest music I've ever made in my life.
Which I was surprised by. We're going to get into the music too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's funny how it came full circle. But yeah, we'll get into that in good time.
Sure. So, okay. So you end up, you pass the audition, you're part of the cast, you end up in the loft. And things, cameras start rolling, things start going. Like, was there a point early on you say to yourself, what the hell, what did I get myself into? You guys really had no idea what you were getting yourself into.
Correct. We were very much in the dark, but, I got friendly with the crew and the directors. They were a little older than me, but they were very much, kind of that older brother, older sisters kind of situation. And that put me at ease. I think that, and to be honest, I enjoyed all of the cast. So we were kind of all in it together. So I think that any sort of discomfort was eased by the time I met everyone and I was pretty adventurous even at a young age like that, so it wasn't I wasn't terribly nervous. I thought I throw me in the middle of the ocean, I can swim,
yeah. So something I didn't realize though, like again going back to these new episodes and you guys bring it up a lot, is you guys were like 3-4 months living together.
3 months. Mm-hmm. 13.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah. I would say that, it's interesting as well. Most of us had a second place. Okay. I had my house in New Jersey. Kevin had a place in Brooklyn. Okay. Or maybe it was Jersey. I'm not sure. I know Heather had a place in New Jersey. Norman had a place in Brooklyn. I believe Becky had a place. Julie was really the only one that did not have a separate bedroom somewhere in the New York area. She Wow. literally was the only person that, was there all 13 weeks, every day, even on the days that we weren't filming, because back then filming was very different than what I, certainly than what it was when we just did this homecoming series, and what I understand the later seasons of Real World became a much more 24/7 filming situation. We had a very easy schedule. It was about 80 hours a week. And they would post the schedule, the itinerary for the week. And we knew what days were going to be dark, where the lights, none of the crew was there. Lights were out. So if I knew that Monday and Tuesday were dark, I would either not show up and go live in my, my place in Jersey, or I'd be there and know that the filming wasn't going to be taking place. So it was a little different. And that 80 hours went by pretty quick. You're looking at about 4 days a week, because they would be there for between, 12 and 14, 15 hour shifts.
That's interesting, because I mean, that shows you right there. Like, I mean, you guys are the true OG originators of this whole reality world thing. And
it's our fault.
We're going to talk about that too. So, but it really is, like, at that point, you can tell just by you saying that really nobody had an idea, like, what was upon them.
Yeah, no, it was, it was a mystery. Yeah. And when we did watch, so we finally did get to see the footage. We saw the first episode during our last week of filming. Okay. During week 13, they showed us episode one. And that was a crazy experience. Because on one hand, I saw how stylish it was and how slick the editing was and everything. But on the other hand, part of me was filled with anxiety and I was very worried because I realized this is not a documentary. It's edited more like a soap opera, and it's not going to always represent things as I saw them, but as more of a story that they want to tell. And that's just my own ignorance how at the time how TV worked. And I was 21 and had no idea. So I also realized the detrimental effect that it could have on my band at that moment that I'd never even considered. So it was a bittersweet moment when we did finally see the first episode.
Okay, well, how about that then? Take it a step further. So the first episode then airs. Your family sees it, your friend sees it, your band sees it. What is the reaction?
Very mixed reaction. You know, the band all saw the same inherent problems that I did, and started to worry about the reaction and being so closely associated with something that was kind of at the time. I mean, the climate at the time was so different.
Sure.
1992. Bands like Nirvana were at the top of their game, and Nirvana was very anti-corporate. They were very punk rock, and there was nothing cool about being so closely associated with a fluffy TV show on MTV. And we got a bit of a backlash. We felt that backlash, and it stung, especially from the business. We were seen as usurpers, and we were definitely seen as people that went around the normal channels and did not go through surpassed the normal gatekeepers, you know.
Right.
And these gatekeepers take their positions very seriously, and they do not take that kind of thing lightly. So it was, we definitely felt a lot of that backlash, and maybe even some of it was self-imposed. Some of that we were feeling perhaps a little too, maybe we were too sensitive about it. And then the climate changed. Now people give away that stuff on a whim. I mean, they're people are, everyone's got their own channel on YouTube and TikTok and everything. It's so strange how the climate is so much more accepting of that now, whereas when I did it, it was not the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's still so weird to see. And actually, again, last night, 3-4 o'clock this morning, as we're laying in bed watching this, like I turned to my fiance and I said, where did the 30 years go? Like, where did it go? Like, I can still remember sitting on my couch watching it and, having those mixed emotions at first early on. But then, MTV started playing it constantly and constantly and more and just getting so sucked into it. And then getting like jealous, like, damn, because I'm the rocker. I wanted to be Andre. You know what I mean? Like, where's my little piece? Mm. Let me get in on this craziness and fun. And
well, yeah, I mean, I certainly experienced some of that as well. A lot of people that were very and that's kind of the nature of it. I think that that with any with any modicum of success, you're going to experience some of that backlash from people that either don't understand it or don't want to know about it. It's just, right. You know, the rock scene, it has that kind of inherently in it. It's baked in the cake. You know, there's a, mm-hmm. there's a certain percentage of that. That's just, you're going to get. And I think that, you know, to borrow a phrase from today, a lot of haters, I'm not calling you that, of course, but there's, you know, that's there was that sense quite a bit back then. And you mentioned, you know, where did those 30 years go? Well, I live in LA where every day is the same. So and I've been here 25 years. So yeah, I know that emotion. Where does that time go? Because literally, when there are no seasons to mark the change of time, and literally every day is the same for the last 25 years, for, you know, all intents and purposes, that time does go by fast like that. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, 30 years is gone. So where does it go? I don't know.
So. How about that? You kind of touched on it a little bit already. did you almost get like a and not just you, but almost kind of the cast, from what it sounded like, it's teased a little bit throughout the story so far in the first few episodes, like almost like you guys were trying to get, you know, each individual entertainment aspiration that you had were almost kind of like blackballed in a sense, except for Eric, who kind of broke through. But
yeah, well, it's funny, and I don't want to you know, I have my own thoughts about that. I wouldn't say that we were blackballed or blacklisted, but maybe a little bit. You know, and I do think that certainly in the music business did not take kindly to, or certainly the rock world did not take kindly to what we were doing. And maybe we just weren't very good. I don't know. They did react negatively to what we were doing. And our methods right. of getting attention. It's a weird thing. And you know, I want to feel like, you know, that everything is based on merit. I shouldn't say maybe we weren't good, because we were good. I'm you know, certain, you know, certainly proud of most of what we did and we released, but you know, it's a weird thing, man. It's having that kind of attention, mm-hmm. and never being able to live up to it, given your own music, you know, your own endeavor on your own time, not being able to live up to that kind of attention. People look at you like, oh, you didn't make it, you know, or something like snarky like that. Right. It's like, you know, it's kind of silly, because it's just, I don't think anybody can really live up to that level of attention that you know.
Did you feel that way yourself, though? Like when things started to really blow up for the show, and I mean, you guys were like starting to get recognized and things like that. Did you feel that pressure now to for you and your band to really blow up?
Well, you know, we did not really play our cards very well. We turned down our major label offers and wanted to, we were DIY before DIY was really cool. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was just the way to go. But what we weren't realizing was the legitimacy that a major label offered and brought to the table, and as well as the things that only a major label can provide, distribution, mm-hmm. And connections in dealing with, you know, touring and money for that matter.
Sure.
We were not as savvy as we should have been, and we tried to get that way, We did, you know, sign a major publishing deal. But by then, we were we were moving in opposite directions internally. And in order for a DIY situation to have worked, everyone would have had to have been very single-minded, very focused. We were internally breaking up at that time. So it didn't last.
Gotcha. Okay. So going back to, the show and the house originally, who do you think was like your best friend in the house initially?
Oh, you know, I would say that I got along. Sorry. I got along with, I would say, you know, Heather, Norman, and Julie, the best while I was living in the loft. Subsequently, you know, I've had wonderful experiences with all of them. As I, you know, I mentioned, I live in Los Angeles. It's very much a destination. Everyone makes it out to LA sooner or later. And when they do, you know, we meet for dinner, we meet for cocktails, we meet for coffee or whatever. I have them over the house. And I travel for work as well. I work in music publishing. So I go to New York and I call Kevin, I call Heather, I see them frequently as well. We've all kept in touch over the years. And you know, the relationships that we had, in the loft have only grown for that matter, and flourished over the years.
It truly seems like, the relationships built in that with you guys in that season, it's kind of like almost, to a friendships going back to like a grade school where true friendship bonds are formed. You know what I mean? Like that you might have those handful of people through your life that you still remain in contact with from grade school. It seems like those like were some serious bonds that were formed with you guys.
Well, we went through a lot together. I mean, we were part of something that was very unique, very special. And we saw something that we helped create become a monster. So we could commiserate on a lot of those points. We could certainly gripe about how, you know, we weren't compensated as well as we wanted to be. And there we just had a lot in common, given the uniqueness of the experience and the fact that there was only the seven of us that could really speak to it. Right. We were in a extremely unique and insular place where we could only console each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about that? Like, so the show does blow up to probably everybody's surprise in the industry and outside the industry. It blows up, becomes this true thing to change television. In reality, it changes TV and
pop culture, everything.
Yeah, pop culture, everything. And you guys are on the ground floor, you're the originators. How does your life change from once that starts airing so much and things start coming through? I mean, and I've said this before with my own experiences in the entertainment industry with pro wrestling and stuff like that. TV is such a medium where you realize, like in the music industry, music's one thing, the radio is one thing, but being seen on television is truly a whole nother level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to break in on that level.
Yeah.
It's yeah. It's a, I don't know if I can say this on the air. It's a mind. Yeah. It's a mind fuck. You know? But you were asking, the question was,
how did your life change?
How did my life change? That's right. Well, you know, I made it a point to not let my life change. And it was probably, probably an unwise decision. I should have, I should have taken more of the opportunities that came to me because of the show. I turned down a lot more opportunities because I just wanted to be, I wanted to make it in music and not pursue other creative endeavors. And that was probably a mistake. I'm sure I could have enjoyed a lot of the opportunities that came my way that I didn't pursue. One that comes to mind is when Ridley Scott's office called me to, participate in, I'm sure it would have just been, casting or something, but that could have opened up, enormous opportunities that I just turned down cold. No thanks. When Tom Freston asked me to at a party, Tom Freston was the head of Viacom. Okay. When he asked me if I wanted to be a VJ, no thanks, turned it down cold. Wow. It was a lot of things like that that I just was like, nah, not wise. who knows, I may not have had I just been a little more open to it, even if I didn't actually do it or get the gig or whatever, mm-hmm. it could have certainly opened my eyes to the possibilities, and instead I just shunned them, and that was probably a big mistake. But to answer your question, how did it change my life? Well, it didn't. I made it a point to not change my life, mm-hmm. and that was probably not the wisest move.
But also too, that was probably hard work in itself to turn those down. That's tougher than accepting them.
Well, I just thought that it was it was going to be a distraction,
right?
And I wasn't really thinking of building my own brand at the time, which I should have been.
Sure. Huh. How about, did you get like, you talk about offers like that, but how about like, was there any like popular bands that approached you to maybe fill a role or anything?
Was there any bands? Not really. I mean, we were, I guess had there been any of that, it would have definitely just wound up. I was pretty serious. The guys that I was in that band with, yeah. We all grew up together, so it wasn't even, it was a non-starter. It wouldn't have even gotten past the management, right. We were pretty much together until we weren't.
Okay, so the first season ends, time is starting to move on, and then all of a sudden there becomes a season two of The Real World.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like the world's revolving around Puck and everybody else in the new season, and you guys are kind of almost forgotten.
Yeah. Well, right.
How much of a mind fuck was that now?
Yeah. We kind of knew that was going to be a situation that, they were going to film the second season in Los Angeles with a different cast. And we were, some of us, one of us was singled out and made be very much a mainstay on MTV. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us were kind of shown the door. That to me wasn't a big deal because I wasn't interested in being mm-hmm. Being a host, being a VJ, to being an actor. I wasn't really all that interested at the time. I just wanted to, be in a band and make records and tour, which is exactly what I did. But I'm sure that, you know, and like, and as I've just said, I turned down many opportunities that would have, that could have changed that. But I get, you know, it's never great to, you know, meet the, you know, your ex-wife's new husband either, you know.
True. So,
there's always that.
True. So, okay, so going back to, like, we touched on it a little bit already, like, you know, you guys really changed television. Did you guys, did you think about this through the years as you're seeing now this whole reality world of television grow and explode? Think to yourself, holy crap, I'm part of the reason this is what it is now. And I'm also, I don't know if you ever thought of this too, I'm also part of the reason MTV doesn't play music anymore.
Well, no. I it's funny. I can't tell you how many people have come to me and said, you know, why doesn't MTV play music anymore? I'm like, well, I'll tell you why. Because when a song comes on that people don't like, they change the fucking channel. That's why MTV doesn't play music anymore. Has nothing to do with the fact that they're, well, it does have something to do with the fact that they're favoring more scripted and reality programming, because that keeps the viewer glued to the TV. Like it or not, that keeps the viewer glued to the TV. You put on a song that they don't like, they're going to change the channel. And that's what they did. And that is why MTV stopped playing music. As much as we all wish that it did, I mean, seriously, it's the question that, you know, I can't tell you how many people have angrily, I'm not saying of course you, but have angrily have come to me and said, you know, why MTV should be playing music and it's your fault and all this shit. And I'm like, no, it's not. I have nothing to do with it. And it's because of you, actually, because you changed the channel when they played Michael Jackson, and had you not, had you just sat there and stuck with it through the songs that you didn't like to get to the ones you did, well, maybe they'd still be playing music.
This is true. So, all right. So let's come back into modern day now. So when are you contacted about doing Homecoming?
This thing came up so quickly. We got notified in December of 2020.
Holy crap.
Yeah. No, it was like December 5th, December 6th.
Wow.
Eric hit us up on our running text thread. We've had a running text thread the last couple of years.
Okay.
Just people sharing kind of like news in their personal lives. And Kevin's got a new book, you know, Heather's got a new show on Sirius XM. And you know, we would notify each other of these things. And on the text thread, Eric said, hey, have you guys gotten a call yet for the, they want to do a reunion. And they've done reunions before. Mm-hmm. And often they wrangle a bunch of casts from different seasons together and, you know, try to kill a bunch of birds with one stone. And it's never the kind of thing that I really enjoy being a part of. So I was like, I didn't receive a text, and I've not participated in some of these reunions where they had multiple casts. And at first I thought, well, they're not even going to call me because I've turned these down before.
Right.
If it's a multiple cast thing, I'm not interested for the most part. And that's not really anything against any of the other cast members. I've met many of them and they're lovely people for the most part. But it's more to do with the fact that, you know, I like the people that I shot with. Mm-hmm. And we experience something unique and special, and that's where I like to end it. I mean,
sure.
I'm not, the much larger gathering, it's just not something I really want to perpetuate.
Sure.
So at first I was like, I don't really think that this is going to be anything. And it's, you know, it's a crazy time, COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. So then Kevin texted me and said, no, they just called me and they want all seven of us and only our cast. And, you know, look out for the call. And as soon as I'm reading this, I get the call from the casting director, from Buna Murray. And I was like, okay, well, this is serious. So I'm speaking to the casting director, and they explain the concept, bringing us all together, living in New York, and sort of revisiting what we originally did. And I was like, well, that sounds great. That sounds really cool and very nostalgic and mm-hmm. very much what we originally did. And it deals only with us. And I haven't, you know, seen the group as a group for many years. So of course I would do that. And it sounds like fun. But you know, the negotiations were much longer than I had anticipated, and more complicated. They expanded the number of, at first it was just going to be one special. Then it turned into four. Then it turned into six. And it became much more complicated. I have a 4-year-old daughter. I have a regular job at a music publisher. I'm expected to work all the time. And, you know, my wife and I, we have a house to run here, two big dogs, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I can't just take off, on a whim. So it's a lot of planning, a lot of coordination. Sure. And as things, you know, started to take shape, I didn't even receive my contract until the day before Christmas Eve. It was during that holiday week that I had to find, you know, my lawyer, an entertainment lawyer, to read through the contract on a very difficult period over the holidays. Right. And, you know, make sure that some of the sticking points had to be ironed out in the contract. They were using kind of a boilerplate contract at first. That did not sit well. Some of the stipulations about the music that gets played and did not. I had to have a lot of alterations done to the contract and over a very difficult time. But still, we managed to pull it off. Have the contract signed before the end of the year. I left for New York on January 5th, quarantined for 10 days in New York, and started shooting, I believe, on the 15th of January. Yeah.
And how long did you guys actually shoot for?
A week.
It was, that's what I thought. Okay.
7 days. Yeah. And the seventh day got canceled because of a COVID scare in the crew that had someone on the crew side of the house. But it wasn't the actual crew. I think it was a press person. They're very secretive about who's tested positive. Mm-hmm. So the COVID regulations are very strict and they're, you know, having to deal with privilege of knowledge of who's sick and everything. Anyway, someone, I believe a press person, had tested positive and was exposed in to the crew, but they're only, you know, about one thin wall away from us.
Right.
And so they canceled the last day of the shoot. We woke up at 8, we were supposed to start shooting at 8 a.m. that day, and we got notified, hey, we're clearing out, get your bag, we're moving into a hotel, and we're going to stay at a hotel tonight. But then that last day, we did go back for a couple of hours when I think it was even a false positive. I think it turned it, 'cause we were all being COVID tested daily, sometimes twice a day. Wow. And I think that what happened was that was a false positive, but the regulations insisted that we clear out. And then they had a crew come in and completely disinfect the entire loft, 4,000 square foot loft, had to be professionally disinfected. I mean, it was just crazy, you know? So we ended up only shooting for 6 of those days in the loft. And then the 7th day got sort of cut into a couple of, it was the evening of that night. And then the next day we did some other things in the daytime. But it was, that last day was kind of dragged out. I ended up having to extend my trip slightly, to accommodate the additional shooting that was required, just to get the final shots of us moving out and everything, because we had to clear out pretty quickly.
Wow. What was like when things really started coming together and the initial contact, what was your initial thoughts? Like, I don't know if I want to do this again, or like, yeah, this would be kind of cool.
Well, no, I mean, I was interested in doing it when I found out what the actual plan was. I wasn't terribly excited about it before I learned that it was going to be just our cast and that they were going to be shooting in New York.
Right.
The episode count got doubled and then tripled. So it was, it was definitely a process. But I think I was certainly, when I learned about what the concept was, I was on board.
Now, how many episodes will there be?
I believe 6.
Okay. Cool. Now, how about, did they tell you guys it was going to be at the original loft, or?
No, they didn't. They kept that secret until the actual day that we moved in to that loft. It was all very hush hush. You know, we weren't even allowed to see each other while we were in quarantine. Before we started shooting, they had us in, 7 separate hotels all around New York, where we were each quarantining separately. When they dropped us off at the loft, immediately I knew where I was at Prince and Broadway. And I mean, I've been there a bunch of times since then. So I was like, oh, that's so awesome. I can't believe they got the actual loft and here we are. This is great. And of course it just added to the nostalgia of it all and the specialness of it. I mean, it added to it, and it was, great to be able to do the show in the original space.
It does truly add so much to it. It's truly amazing. Like, if people have not seen it.
And that's the reason why they had to, why that everything had to happen so quickly. There was just a very short window when the previous owner left and the new owner was going to take occupancy. There was this 3-week window where they could do this, and that's it. There was no pushing it. Had something happened in the negotiations, had something happened in production, had something happened that derailed it, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation. They would have not shot the show.
It's truly something like, when you're saying that, that tells me like this was truly meant to be. This was meant to happen, this whole thing.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I definitely think it's the right time for Gen X to be reflective of what we've all gone through, and certainly these last 4 years have been pretty crazy politically, and we've seen some pretty low lows and some crazy times of with COVID and everything. So it's a nice way to touch on, you know, because the early 90s when we shot the original show, that was another transitional crazy period that could have gone either way. And you know, luckily for us, we experienced a very prosperous period through the 90s, but it wasn't guaranteed that that's how that was going to go.
Right.
And we were at an equally unsure moment this year as well. So, you know, there were some interesting parallels that that made this all the more, you know, interesting.
You know, it's funny you use the word parallel, because I think last night's the new episode that came out last night, and even last week's episode, you can see the parallels are still there from, you know, 30 years ago to today in the conversations you guys are having. And it's kind of, it's so scary and eye-opening at the same time.
Yeah, it's sad to know that some things have changed and some things have not.
Yeah, you can really, it's out of any of the cast too, I think you could see it most on your face when they pan to you. You have this facial reaction, just it says it all on your face.
Well, I like to think that I've got a better poker face than that, but maybe not, huh? I guess I shouldn't go to Vegas.
It kind of says I've been here before.
Yeah. Well, like I'm sure I'm wearing my reaction genuinely.
You know, and I can't seriously praise you know, you and the rest of the cast enough for what you guys did originally and what you guys are doing now. It has, I mean, seriously, it has meant so much to me, even more now, being able, because, I mean, honestly, like, after all these years, like, it's kind of been in the past. You kind of totally forgotten about it. And now that it's come back, it's like, oh, my God. And you see how truly important it was in your life then, and watching it now, it's like, as you know, a 50-year-old person, like, it's important now to see it again, and
to
see the growth of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the reaction's been wonderful. I must say, I'm thrilled to know how you know, it's very special to me. These seven people are all very special to me. We are a family. And family is bizarre, no matter whose family you're talking about. Everyone's family has some crazy, bizarre characters in it. And we are certainly no exception to that rule. Our family is bizarre. And it's nice to be, you know, thought of so well, and to know that, you know, people are genuinely interested in what we've been doing and what we're doing now. It's been a pleasant experience as far as, you know, seeing the reactions of people and hearing how they are you know, still interested, and they like what they see, which is nice as well.
Absolutely. So, all right. So, catch us up. Like, we have 29 years to catch up on. Catch us up. Like, so the original series ends. You had the band Rain Dance going on. As a matter of fact, when I started posting that you were going to be on the show tonight, like I'm originally from Philly. One of my friends from Philly is like, "Oh my God, I saw him play in Philly back in the day."
Sure. Our record label was outside of New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And
we would play New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York, regularly. We were, you know, we lived in New Jersey, so we were very much, you know, East Coast based band for a long time. Band broke up in 97 after three albums, and I moved to Los Angeles that same year. I stopped playing rock music shortly thereafter, and started playing acoustic folk music, much through my appreciation of Bob Dylan and you know, songwriters of that ilk. You know, I just really got into that whole thing. It opened my musical tastes, you know, to a whole new world. And at the time, rock just wasn't doing it for me, especially heavy rock. It was, it moved into an area that I wasn't particularly fond of. And I moved away from rock for a long time, and got into folk and bluegrass, frankly. I learned how to play the banjo, and I had a folk band that I, you know, was creating with for about 15 years exclusively. Oh, wow. That's all I was doing. I released five records with that band, none of which were particularly successful here in LA. It's definitely not the country music mainstay. I mean, I should have, had I known that I was going to move into that area, I probably would have moved to Austin, Texas, or Nashville, or somewhere.
That's
that
where I'm at. Come on down.
But and I got out of it right around the time that the new folk revival started. So I kind of missed out on all of the popularity of the entire genre. But that's okay, because really what happened was I just coincidentally wrote some songs that could only be interpreted as rock songs. I wanted to flesh them out, so I put a band together, a rock band, and it just, I just remembered how much I missed it. Honestly, it's I got a chance to, you know, sing in a range that I kind of wasn't really doing. I mean, you know, as a, I grew up in with rock music. I mean, that's, sure, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and Detroit has a rich history of rock music. And I, you know, I sing, I can bring it in the rock world. I don't mind saying it. I have a vocal range that I wasn't using in the folk world, and you know, I've got great guitars and great amps and all this stuff. I hadn't even cracked open the case of my Les Paul for years. Ooh. and it was sad. So I was kind of thrilled to be making that kind of music and one thing led to another. You know, four songs became eight songs rather quickly. We recorded them really fast. My drummer is my producer, and Darren owns a recording studio here in LA. And, you know, we had some friends, you know, passed our songs around to some of the business folks, and got such a great reaction. You know, we signed to a rock label, David Ellefson of Megadeth's rock label.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, they were super excited about it. And, you know, I hadn't gotten that kind of, you know, that kind of attention. As I mentioned, LA is not a hub for roots and Americana, which was the music I was creating for many years. So it fell upon deaf ears for a long time. And to get this kind of attention, well, I just, you know, you gotta go where the love is. And, sure. And so we just continued and put out the album in 2020. It got a great reaction, got great reviews, got good, play, on rock radio in many red states, where rock is still, sort of a, you know, a mainstay. But then COVID kind of dashed all the touring that we were planning on doing to support the album. So we just went right back into the studio and started working on the follow-up. And it was about, you know, that was in October when we started working on the new album. In December, I got the notice about the reunion. You know, they were all so excited that I was making rock music and that I grew my hair out again, because it really fit my character that, you know, from back in the day. It made me just realize, well, you know, I need to put more into, because I was just going to take my time recording this next record. And I wasn't really planning on not rushing it, but, you know, burning the midnight oil to get it done. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what we did. And, we really did, you know, put the, pedal to the metal, recorded this, new record in record time. As a result, we have a new single coming out in less than 2 weeks. Nice. It's called Clean Break. It's awesome, and I'm excited about it. And I'll be playing. Actually, I have some tour dates coming up in May and in April. Red states, here I come. It's exciting. You know, it's just it's been a crazy whirlwind. Wasn't expecting it, but here I am.
Do you feel like you're back being 21, 22 years old again with all this stuff happening all over again?
No. I mean, I'm well aware of, you know, so many things have in my personal life have changed. You know, I'm married. I have, you know, a 4-year-old daughter. Real responsibilities, house, dogs, you know, here's my dog right here. Actually, he's taking a leak. It's crazy. I'm well aware of my age, and I'm pretty happy with it. I don't need to act like I'm 20. I wear this gray hair with pride.
Believe me, I feel you.
Yeah, I know. I think the line in Indiana Jones is not the years, it's the mileage.
There you go. Now, how about that? Like, So when this whole thing starts coming back up again with the homecoming, and you have to approach your wife with this, like, I might be going back to do this all over again.
Well, it's crazy. She never even saw it. She's 11 years younger than me. She knew that I was on it, and she's seen clips of it, mm-hmm. but she was very much too young to really be a part of it when it originally aired. And for the longest time, I didn't acknowledge it. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't really a part, you know, I didn't participate in it in many of the subsequent reunions or any of the functions that they would throw. I just wasn't interested. So I didn't really, you know, I didn't play those reindeer games. When they came to us with the offer, I said, you know, I want to watch this. I need to reacclimate myself to what we actually did, and I want to make sure that, you know. And so it was my wife and I that we sat and watched the whole thing. We binged on it from beginning to end, and you know, as a result, I was so pleasantly surprised by, you know, what we were actually doing as opposed to what my perception was, because I'd let the you know, what happened after me color that perception in a negative way.
Was there anything when watching that back, was there anything that made you cringe?
Of course. Mostly my fashions. I'm sure there were plenty of things that I said and did that I was like, but yeah, no, more than anything else, it was what the fuck am I wearing? You know, it was that kind of like, okay, don't mind the fact that you're on camera. Wear the ugliest clothes you can find, dirty, dirty clothes, just out of the dirty clothes hamper, and perpetuate that look for the rest of your life. Nice way to go there. You know, not the smartest move I ever made.
I think it was
fashions are always the thing that people just cringe about when they see old pictures of themselves, and you know, they always look at that and go, what am I wearing? Well, in this case, it was definitely a what am I wearing moment.
I think it was Kevin who said it was either on last night's episode or last week's episode. And I think he summed it up best where he says, you know, we did something 30 years ago that we filmed for TV. How did we not think it was going to come back to kind of bite us in the ass and show us, you know, what we did?
Yeah, well, it's I think that hindsight is 20/20, and at the time, none of us, and I can none. I mean, Eric thought it was going to be huge. Hmm. And was right. But I think that, you know, he was also betting on his own star power to help propel that sort of perception. Mm-hmm. None of us thought that it was going to be, I should say that all of us thought it was probably going to air once or twice and never be heard from or seen again.
Right.
Just like every other show on MTV. Sure. At that time, because that's what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, do you remember the show Remote Control, the game show that they
had? Yeah, of course.
Okay. Did you ever see any of those episodes ever again?
No.
Exactly. No. So why would we think anything different from our show?
Yeah.
But yet it's been played and replayed and marathoned and moved to this network and then that network. And for the last 30 years, I mean, sure, there have been times that it didn't get aired, and there have been years even that, you know, that it hasn't been focused on. But, you know, it's been I know, you know, because I'm told, you know, I get, you know, often on social media, or I'll hear from someone in Australia, hey, your show's on, you know, such and such network on in Australia, in New Zealand, in this place or that place. And it's like, what, why? Like, what, you know, what, it's just crazy. But, you know, it's interesting. And I get it, because having watched it for the first time in so long, it's pretty substantive. We were having interesting conversations about real issues, and we did real consequential actions. We went to political rallies. We went to marches in Washington. We were not just, you know, getting drunk and vomiting on each other. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's just not, and that's what kind of, you know, the whole thing kind of turned into, which is what I kind of, you know, walked away from it thinking, well, that's, you know, that's what everyone thinks we did. And so it really did, you know, affect my own memory of it.
I think like what you just said is so true. It really was, the title is just so perfect, Real World, because there was so many true real conversations. And a lot of the conversations, like I like, again, going back to like last night's episode, laying in bed, I was saying, like, I remember, you know, like the things that happened on last night's episode and original episodes, so much of the stuff with Kevin. I just remember thinking to myself, oh, here we go again, here we go again, here we go again. But I said last night, I was like, you know, it's 30 years later and it's still going again. Like, I'm looking at it now, I'm like, Kevin was right.
Certainly.
He was certainly right.
I said it to him in no uncertain terms. Hey man, you were right.
Yeah.
You're what we were kind of pushing back against way back when we were, you know, just ignorant.
Yeah.
Straight up. We just didn't know. And it wasn't until you know, we've seen time and time again, these injustices, the George Floyds, the Breonna Taylors, all of these incidences of terrible injustices that go on. And, it's horrendous. And we, you know, Kevin, I'm so thankful that Kevin and I have had, so many, sort of experiences after Real World, you know, where we were just hanging out. I most recently, my company, had a holiday party in Manhattan where we had a reimagining of Eric B. and Rakim's Follow the Leader album performed at the party. And I invited Kevin because I know that he's a big Eric B. and Rakim fan. You know, it was just so great to be able to see him. And this is like 2019. And we've had so many chances to bond, other than, you know, just going down memory lane.
Right.
You know, when I do go down memory lane with him, it's like, I just can't help but admit my own fault in not recognizing, but how could you know until you actually, you know, see it. And even when you do see it, it's hard to even fucking believe what you're seeing, because it's so unbelievable. Yeah. You know, the injustices in this world. It's awful.
It's true. It's absolutely true. So, Andre, dude, I can't thank you enough for doing this. This has been a hell of a conversation. Thank you for leaving a mark on my life 30 years ago and retouching that mark again today. It's been amazing.
My pleasure. My pleasure. It's, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and it was a good conversation.
Thanks, man. Now, where should we send everybody to keep up to date with you, the music?
AndreComoMusic.com, we'll be posting our tour dates there. The new album, Clean Break, will be out in April, and the single comes out in, I think, 10 days. Awesome. It's, you know, you can also, if you want, you can download our most recent record, Wrong Within. It's, by the way, it's my name, Andre Como is the name of the band. You can hear the most recent album that came out in 2020. Called Wrong Within. Multiple songs have been featured on this season of Real World Homecoming. Just last night, or today's episode, had a track called Out of Control. The song Firebird was featured on the first episode.
That's my favorite.
There's a lot of cool stuff on that one. The new album is smoking. It's I'm so excited to get it out there. And, you know, we'll be playing your town very soon.
Come to Nashville, man. Let's have some drinks. Let's rock out and let's get some food.
Will do.
Awesome. And everybody, Paramount Plus, Real World Homecoming, you must see it because it's so eye-opening, and it's more than a trip down memory lane. It's amazing.
Thanks again.
Thanks, Andre. Take care, man.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.